League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello. I hope this is a nice surprise with a little bonus episode of Soundtracking for you. This is one I've been trying to kind of get for you over the last couple of weeks, and finally everybody signed it off, so I'm excited to share this bonus episode with you. F1, the movie, came out a while ago, a good few weeks ago, and I had actually got time with Joseph Kosinski and Jerry Bruckheimer, but unfortunately I was away on the times that they had the junket, and that was the only opportunity. So I was like, ah, that's a shame, that's gone. However, I used to host these events kind of sporadically at the Apple Store in London. They used to do these regular kind of in conversations up on the first floor in the little theatre area. I've done so many over the years. Weirdly, did one with Kevin Feige way back. I think it might have been the first or the second Iron Man film. So that's how long ago we're talking about it. Anyway, haven't done one for absolutely ages. And then got approached by Apple asking if I wanted to be interested in coming along to host an in conversation with some of the HODs, heads of departments, around Formula One. I was like, yes, please. And I was so excited because it was a conversation that we don't normally get the chance to have outside of like award season, when you get to host these panels with kind of collection of creatives. So along at the Apple Store, I was joined by casting director Lucy Bevan, one of the production designers, Ben Munro, one of the editors, Stephen Mirioni, and cinematographer Claudio Miranda. Now, these are names that some of you might know, some of you will know. They are at the top of their game. Claudio, as we were talking, was off back up to a secret location to continue filming on the Ryan Gosling Star Wars project. I know. He worked with Joseph and Jerry on Top Gun. Stephen Mirioni has done so much amazing work. Birdman, worked a lot with Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu. I just did the new Tom Cruise Alexandro project. So, I mean, and Lucy has casted everything from Barbie to Belfast to Batman, basically, and everything in between that. And then Ben Munro, in terms of production design as well, worked on some extraordinary films. Masters of the Air, Prometheus. So just to give you an idea of the scale of the productions that he's worked on in the past. So there we have it, this amazing collection of creatives, all at the top of their game, all together talking about their experience in preparation, leading up to, in the filming and post-production on F1, the movie. Which I have to say, massive thanks to Apple and everybody at the store and everybody behind the scenes, and also the Warner's team for facilitating the conversation. It was absolutely joyful. So before we bring in Lucy, Claudio, Ben and Stephen, let's start with our dear old friend Hans Zimmer and the title cue from the film.
Nice, isn't it? Please welcome our wonderful panel. They might be a little bit fragile. They had their premiere last night. Listen, I've been lucky enough to see the film too, and I'm so grateful I get the chance to chat to you about it. I'm going to dive in with you first, Lucy, if that's all right, because I imagine that even though there might well be conversations going on with you all, with Joseph in production, the cast is, you know, they've got to be there before a camera can start rolling. So how was this with this? What were the conversations that you had with Joseph? And I don't know, was Brad already in this? You know, he was attached to it and he was in 100% already.
Brad was on board, and then it was my job to cast the rest around him.
Everybody else.
And, of course, Damson's role was the key role that we started with as the second lead. And we auditioned and we auditioned and we auditioned, and Damson did brilliantly. And then Joe and Jerry thought that we better put him on the track to see if he could handle the driving.
Wow.
So that was part of the audition process.
Did he get any training, or was it just a case of getting the car
and
drive?
He's a really smart, brilliant guy. So, of course, he did loads of training, loads of practice, and he turned up and he did really well. And at the end of his audition day, he turned to me and said, right, Lucy, your turn, get in the car.
And did you?
I did.
Yes!
And it was absolutely terrifying.
It's interesting to think about what Joseph was looking for. You know, you go through all this, you see lots of people for this role. And is it, as a casting director, is it a feeling? Do you see something? Do you feel something? Is it...
Well, it's a huge role going toe-to-toe with Brad, and we needed to find a young actor who was able to take that on. It's a massive arc. It's a huge challenge. It's a huge responsibility of a part. And then there's the technical aspect of it, of can he actually do it? Because they were really driving. So it was a rigorous process.
And within that side of things as well, you know, you've a big role for someone to take, but as important are all these kind of smaller parts that we see, and particularly in this film where you have the team, you know, all those engineers and all those incredible technicians that are working. There's camaraderie there. There's relationships there that we might not dive into it, but we've got to feel those relationships are real and honest. That in itself must be such a tricky thing to kind of maneuver and find those people.
Yeah, that's right. And Joe Kaczynski was really determined to make the world as authentic as possible. And for me, there's no such thing as a small part, because every time anyone's carrying the dialogue, they are telling the story. Mm. And those each individual part was so carefully picked that Joe referenced, like, Gunter Steiner for our team captain, which is Kim Bodnia, and Lewis's own engineer. He referenced Peter Bonington for the engineer parts who were in the earpieces of Brad and Damson's character. So I had all these great reference points for Joe, which were very detailed to make sure that the world was authentic as possible. And so we just zoned in and found actors. And then with the mechanics, we took them down to the garage where they were building the cars to see if they could believably work with the cars.
So it's not just a case of like, seeing someone and casting them, there's a whole process, physical process to it as well.
Yeah, they're really physical parts, all of those. So they would start by auditioning with me in my office, and then we'd take them and, you know, put them through that process. We wanted to make it feel as authentic to the world as possible.
Yeah. I want to just quickly mention Kerry Condon as well, if we can, because I think it's an I love her. I mean, Banshees of Inisherin, I just thought she was extraordinary. And seeing her in this, why was she right for this role?
Kerry is funny, clever, smart, and fearless. And you just believe her in that part. And that's right, she just done Banshees, which is an extremely different role. But I've seen her do loads of theatre. She's an incredible actress. She always has been. And yeah, I just felt very confident that she could take that on.
As she absolutely does. Claudio Benintendi, I have this image in my head that, I don't know, Joe calls a kind of band meeting and you all kind of sit around a table and he goes, right, guys, this is what I want to do. What is the reality for you all with your different departments, you know, with cameras and DOP, with editing and with production design, that you start having those conversations with him? When do those conversations happen? And what are those conversations? Claudio, do you want to start?
I mean, the conversation was, we wanted this movie to feel real. We want these cars to go, 180 plus miles per hour. We want the camera system to go 180 miles plus per hour. I think we hit 200 a couple times. So normal filming production is usually you put these cameras on a movie trailer. So then that means all the cars go. And I've seen really sad versions of movies like that too. So I just didn't want to make a really sad version of just, okay, the car's outside, goes really fast, but when you get inside the car, it's going 30. You know, if you put it on a movie thing, it usually goes fast as 60 miles an hour, and you go around the corner, it's 20. But F1 is going always 180 miles an hour, and the G's, and this, and also the car is so exposed, so you just know that no tricks of speeding it up would really go that far to make this work.
And this involved you basically creating your own technology for it. I mean, there are so many kind of perspectives that we get to see. But for those cars to be able to house cameras, what type of cameras, you know, they're housing, there's so many variants to capturing what you want to capture for us to feel it.
Well, there was a difference. Like, we did something similar on Top Gun, but on Top Gun, they didn't have to fly the plane. So the difference of this one, they actually had to drive the car. So that was a big difference. So if I put the same camera in front of that I had for Top Gun, it would have been, they couldn't see where they're going. And it was really critical to see where you're going.
Yeah. There's a corner so, coming up.
So I kind of, we had, you know, I actually had Sony develop a really small camera for us. Wow. That we were able to, I said like a sensor on a stick. And there were one-offs. So they built us 20 one-off cameras for this. And and I built little bridges where they can kind of see underneath. And also we wanted to have a new effect that we wanted the cameras to be able to pan.
Yeah.
And also pull focus and also be able to go around all the tracks. So that was a little bit of engineering. And that also the cars had to be safe for potentially crashing. So I had to work closely with Mercedes engineering camera mounts. And I worked, you know, trying to previs where all the camera mounts and work with Joe back and forth and say, what do you think about this one? And then it's not like we could just get on the car and just stick things on there. That had to be safe. So everything had to be a 3-month lead time before we could actually say, okay. So that was challenging.
Honestly, how much you feel like you're in the car is so incredible. But then you cut to a shot where you're watching the two cars and you're going, there's no mounts or cameras on that car sort of thing. So the kind of the attention to detail of those shots, you know, and that's the editing on that of cutting between those is just... How? Where did you start with these, yeah, particularly with the race segments of this?
And by the way, in terms of, you know, the band meeting, I'm usually cocooned away from everybody because he doesn't want me to necessarily, he doesn't want me to, like, the good thing for me is I have the perspective of watching without knowing how hard it was to capture.
Okay, yeah.
So
just
if
get
it's
to
not,
enjoy it.
Yeah, so, well, and if it's not impressing me, knowing all the work that went into it, then, you know, maybe it's, it doesn't belong in the movie. But this movie is different than a lot of projects for me or any editor, because in order to do all of the stuff that they were doing at live events, in cooperation with all the teams and all that, the preparation was enormous, and the windows for when you could shoot were really tiny. Like, you maybe had to do a scene with all the crowds and all the lineup. You had like 5 or 10 minutes to shoot a scene. That's not normal for making a movie.
Yeah.
So my involvement earlier on than normal was getting involved with doing what we call like storyboard cuts. Taking these tremendous storyboards that were done, Richard, I forgot his last name, he did these tremendous storyboards that really became the blueprint, and then we would cut those together and decide, you know, what was working, what wasn't, and make those adjustments with sound, with a lot, you know, like little details, so that when they got to the track, they could be a little more specific, exactly. But then the magic trick of all of it was, I think Joe's idea was to essentially take all of the cameras from the broadcast, so the 20 or so cameras that are around the track, we had a crew that would take our own digital recorders, we were hooked into those cameras. And so we had 5,000 hours of the season of all the track cameras for all the races. So it allowed me, if, you know, imagine if it was just a normal movie where you're getting all the hero shots with the cars and the actors, but then you need B-roll, so you need a whole unit to go around and, like, grab this and this and this. I had the most insane, I was just so spoiled with my B-roll. I don't know if I could ever go back. to working normally because I literally, and I had a whole crew that was essentially dedicated to going through and watching all of it and putting little markers anytime anything interesting or that might apply would happen. And so I could just, if I needed a moment where the cars were battling, that was kind of a further away shot, not one of our practical shots.
Yeah.
I could grab it. I could watch one camera going around the same corner for a 2-hour race and pick exactly the best moment. I don't know if they do this online, but watching the whole race with just the heli cam is fascinating.
Okay.
It's really fun to watch it that way. Anyway, so for me, it became after they collected all this material, especially the races, putting it together in a way that wasn't just exciting, but we were really trying to be careful to make sure that you knew what was happening, where it was happening. We were being really, really careful to not do what you normally do in movies where any corner can substitute for another corner. You know, we had maps of all the tracks and all the camera positions all around the editing room all the time. And we were just really, really careful with those kinds of details. And I think it subconsciously that makes a big difference.
Claudio, just back to you quickly, because I made me think of something else as well in terms of how those races would have had to have been choreographed. Because within the races, there's a narrative for the characters and, you know, the whole film. So those would have to be choreographed so that, you know, Brad's position into Damson's character's position is in the right place for the story. But then on top of that, you're having to run in quickly in between these races happening to capture stuff.
I mean, there's
That's
not
insane.
Only race. Yeah, there was not only racing, but there was even some events that we were doing, I think, when they were singing the national anthem for Silverstone.
Yeah.
That was our first. We had to rehearse that whole thing because we're doing that live. And that one, I get one take. And actually, I did do a little trip, which I was like, I kind of see in the take. And I go like, oh, he's going to kill me. But I don't have a choice. That is the take. So normally in a film, I go, I mess up. And we had to be really small. Like normally we'd have cranes or we'd have bigger pieces of gear. So we had to be kind of light and mobile in the way we approached it. Sometimes you only get one take. There was a scene where I just had a camera on a little like pole. And normally we'd have like fancy cranes and like expensive stuff. And we were just we just had to be a really small print. So they're doing the formation lap and we have our cars in the back and we're actually starting off in the formation lap and, you know, we have to kind of be ready for that. And we get literally one take and it was all, we all like planned and rehearsed. And that was, I was like, you know, like nervous.
Squeaky bum time. Yeah. The national anthem thing that you mentioned, I noticed Lando Norris, he sort of hung around for a little bit longer just for a little bit more screen time. I love that. Love that bit. Ben, just talking about production design, you know, there's outside of the races, there's so much beautiful production design going on that's part of the storyteller. When we think of production design, I think the initial thought is kind of sets and big things. But it's amazing how, well, talk to me about the intricacies of the production design in this film and how important those elements are, like the pinball machine, for example, you know, how they are driving story, relationships, narrative, how people feel about each other, all those kind of things. There's every detail is about driving the narrative and the story. Is that fair?
Absolutely, yeah. And going back to something that Claudia was saying at the beginning about the authenticity of the film, and that was one of Joe's most important kind of notions, really. And as an art department, we are normally used to building and creating the world. It's all about, at the beginning of the film, it's all about us creating this universe that the world exists in. And on this, we were faced with was we didn't actually need to create the world. The world was there. We needed to fit into the world. So there are several worlds. There are the F1, there's Daytona, and then there's the real life world. So, you know, the challenge was, and one of the first meetings that myself and Mark, the other production designer, had with Joe at the beginning was how we make authenticity also super cool, you know. And so the garage had to look great, it had to be, you know, another character in the film is the car. So the garage had to showcase the car, as well as the actors, which we're normally having to deliver sets to showcase the actors. So I had to showcase the car. And then you had Daytona, which was this extraordinary world, which is a real kind of difference between you start the film in Daytona and it's gritty and it's loud and it's aggressive. And again, we had to fit in, you know, and I think what we have succeeded in is that no one actually really comments in this film about the production design. And that, to me, is we have succeeded. And then you have things like you're talking about the pinball. So then you have the world which is outside of the racing world.
Yeah.
And again, you have to be authentic. You can't be overly elaborate. You can't be too showy, you know, because it is about creating an authentic world. However, with the pinball, we wanted a bit of real kind of character, and the scene required a bit of character. And the pinball machine, which you can't see on here, but it's actually called Grand Prix. And it's a very famous pinball machine from the 70s. And Joe was like, we've got to get that pinball machine.
Because that specific.
That specific one.
I'm a pinball collector. And when Joe, we talked about that, and I said, oh, you got to get Grand Prix. So that's my fault.
And it was quite a search. It was quite a search. Anyway, Andrew, the set decorator, found one, and it was the real original one, you know, which when we found it, we realized it didn't actually work very well, you know. And so we had to get it renovated, we had to recondition, we had to make sure the buttons worked. And Toby, the first AD, was like, guys, this is an old pinball machine. It's going to be loud. And this is quite a sensitive dialogue scene about these two characters who haven't seen each other for so long. So we had to deaden the sound on the pinball machine, and, you know, and then halfway through shooting, because it's an old pinball machine, I think it stopped working. And then it was like,
I heard it was on the first take. I heard it was on the, like, after some rehearsals.
The first take, exactly.
The first take, Joe sent me a picture from the set, and everybody's standing around with a guy, you know, diving into the pinball machine trying to fix it. Yeah.
Because they're so funny, because this film had so many extraordinary technicians. And every area is covered. You know, you have the cars, you have the camera, you have Lucy's world, you have, you know, my world.
Stunts.
But this funny old pinball machine had no world attached to it. There was no engineers that came with it. So on the first take, it broke down, and we're like, oh, my God. So we had an art director guy in America who was very talented, unbeknown to me at the time, with a soldering iron. And he found an old bulb, and he opened it up, and he resoldered it, and it got working again.
Wow. So, yeah. And now it lives in Stephen's house.
No. We just rented it, no.
What were some of the, I guess, you know, sort of the bigger scale things, or what were some of the most challenging elements in terms of the production? You mentioned the garage.
Well, the garage, I think, is the obvious one. You know, it was predominantly, you had to look amazing. It had to be authentic. It had to showcase the car. It had to allow the actors the space to act, because actually we were given a lot of parameters that we had to live within, and the garages are a set size and a set dimensions and there's set kind of regulations within the F1 world, which we also had to adhere to, which was also going into, you know, the materials it's made from, and it had to be approved by the FIA because we couldn't take combustible insulation into the Grand Prix world, for example. You know?
Wow.
So going back to the initial conversation that Mark and myself are having with Joe about the authenticity and the super cool nature of it, it was pretty scary, you know, because you're going to go, okay, this is a world we're familiar with. We know this. We design stuff all the time. You know, we work on Star Wars and we create amazing stuff. This was going to be viewed by the public, by the racing fraternity, by diehard fans who know absolutely everything. So when you could talk about the details you were talking about earlier, you know, it's not only about the aesthetic of it. It had to function as a garage as well. So all the tools had to be there. So you open every single drawer, and it would have all the correct tools to deal with the car. All the screen graphics on it, designed by this company called Blind, did an amazing job, had to be real. Had to, even though it was fictitious, it had to be real.
The simulator as well.
The simulator, yeah. And so the whole journey, the months and months of preparing for this, it was always in the back of our minds. It's like, how is this going to be received by the drivers, by the principals, by Joe, by Claudio? There are all these discussions we've had about the overhead light on, is it going to work? You know, oh my God, what happens? And Silverstone 2023 was our delivery date. And of course, for a film like this, Silverstone is where it all begins anyway. So the pressure was really on. Anyway, there was a few beautiful moments. One was, which is in the behind-the-scenes making of, and Lewis comes into the garage and he goes, hey, guys, this is better than my effing garage, you know. And which was great. But also there was Jackie Stewart came in one day.
Oh, wow.
And he said, I've got to say, in the 60 years I've been in motor racing, this is the coolest garage that I've seen. And so, box tick. So once we got over that hurdle, it was like, great. So there were, then that just got repeated. It was, go to all the different countries. It had to, you know, normal film sets, we construct them, we shoot on them, and we throw them away or recycle them if we can. In this, it had to be deconstructed, then it had to go to Hungary, then it had to go to Monza, then it had to go to Abu Dhabi, then it had to go to Las Vegas.
Wow.
And so part of the R&D for us wasn't only about how this thing looks, it's about how you can take it apart and reassemble it and it still look good. So the first installation at Silverstone, it took us 3 weeks. By our last installation at Abu Dhabi, we got it down to like 7 days. And we started behaving like an F1 team, like the real F1 teams. And everyone would go in. Normally you have it like you have the carpenters go in and then you have the painters and then you have the set dressing and then you have lighting. Everyone was just on top of each other from the word go, and it became a rehearsed thing.
Yeah.
So but there's one other set which was challenging in itself, was at Ruben's office, which we shot at McLaren, which is the beautiful design building in Surrey where McLaren's headquarters are. And that was the exterior of our Apex headquarters. But Joe really wanted to shoot Ruben's office in that space. But there wasn't a suitable office, because actually, quite frankly, they're all a bit boring, you know, the real offices.
Tortle's not got a big office.
No. So that's Mercedes, isn't it, McLaren?
Yeah, but sorry. Getting my teams mixed up.
So we designed this office space, and we had to go through this whole process working with McLaren to get permission to build it in their canteen, which was the most unglamorous spot but had the best view out across this lake. It took a really long time, and we got knockbacks. They said no, and then they said yes. Anyway, they said, you can do it if you can build it in 36 hours. So we're like, wow, okay, so how do we do that? So how we did it was we built the set on the stage into its completion. Then we had construction and a stopwatch, and we went 8 o'clock one morning. We went, how long is it going to take you to stand this up? So we timed them, and it was pretty quick, but not quick enough. And then we timed them to take it down, because we had to be in and out super fast. And we made a few amendments, and then we did it again, and we got down to our time, and we're like happy. So then McLaren came and visited us, saw the set. They're like, okay, you're good to go. So then we had an overnight to build this set on the location. And when you see the movie, there is Ayrton Senna's original McLaren F1 car, which he died in. And that is the car which is behind Ruben in a cabinet.
Wow.
So not only did we have to build a set, we had to deal with a car which is, you know, worth, well, it's priceless. Hundreds of millions this car was worth. And we did it. And Jay turned up in the morning and Claudio went, yeah, it's cool. And they turned over and a day it was gone.
Amazing.
You know?
Just like
so,
that.
Just like that. So those were the two. And then everything else you see, hotel rooms, locations.
Yeah.
That's standard fare we do all day long. So,
Claudio, there's a really lovely moment in the film where Brad's character talks about, you can't predict the weather. You can't predict the kind of temperature on this kind of thing. And it made me really think about you talking about those moments where you had one opportunity or you had limited opportunities to capture those things. And as a DOP, how you're having to kind of think on your feet in terms of you've built all the stuff, you've created all this stuff, but you can't control so much of it and you've got one opportunity. How do you navigate?
There's a lot of one opportunities in this movie.
How do you navigate all that in terms of you know, do you have a variety of cameras that can capture things for you, for example, or to deal with what the elements are? Or
well, Abu Dhabi was actually one of the more interesting races because it's actually the one race that starts an hour before sunset, then it goes into like twilight and it goes into night. So that was actually tricky navigating because we had to actually shoot those during those times for the race.
Yeah, and one of the things we did to prep for that race was created a cut that had broadcast footage from the year before, cut together with storyboards of the actors' faces, and then we had like a running time with the light so that you could look at this cut and see what time of day, what's the light for each of the things, which I assume, you know, helped them to make sure that they were shooting that part of the scene in the right light and the right time of day.
And there was probably another one, I guess Monza was another one, where it's supposed to go in this kind of rain mode, so we didn't get that much overcast, and we had just had to wait. We had a really narrow window when just the sun went down, and we just shot like crazy for like in this little 45-minute window.
What's harder, planes or cars?
Planes are louder.
Are they?
Oh, my God. Yeah. You had stuff in your ears, and you had headphones, and it just comes in your mouth, or I don't know where it is.
On those shots of Brad and Damson as well, you know, in terms of the acting that's kind of going on whilst they've got a helmet on as well, is brilliant. You know, there's specific moments where there's no dialogue, but you can kind of totally feel how they're feeling or know how they're feeling. That's an important element for you as well in terms of how you're shooting that and also how you're editing that in amongst all the other parts of that that's going on. Talk to me a little bit of that, you know, those intimate moments and how you construct that and shoot that.
While driving the car?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Brad's actually really great. I feel like it's sensing motion in this, you know, because he's so knocked off. I think our helmets are maybe a fractional wider than the original ones just to get more motion.
Of course you had your own helmets, Bill.
Well, it's just like it helps.
We need more of Brad's face. Yeah, we can't see enough of it.
So that really helped. I think the original one's like a half inch to centimeter less. And we just found that just getting more face was just... a couple things, actually. I need to get light in there because I can't light these things. Yeah. Yeah. So that was kind of a little bit of a trick as well. Yeah.
There was a funny moment where in the race for Hungary, at a certain point, we changed the construction of how we wanted that to play out. And we wanted to show Brad... We wanted to make sure the audience knew that Brad was enjoying what he was doing, was kind of laughing as it was going. And Joe kept asking him, well, we need you to laugh. Like, we need to see that you're laughing. And he's like, guys, I'm doing it. I am laughing. So at a certain point, I'm looking at footage of him going up Eau Rouge in Spa, and he gets up to the top of the hill, and he's got this expression on his face because he's so thrilled that he just got to go up this most famous corner. He is smiling. He's laughing. And so we said, Brad, we know you can do it. We know you can make it look like this. You need to be bigger for us. So he went back and did it. But yeah, in terms of, you know, an actor's instinct is subtlety, right? Is you're trying to do it with like the tiniest piece. But yeah, the quote unquote helmet acting took a little bit of time to dial that in, I would say.
And that's one thing I think was really, really interesting. When I saw the film in its early stages before Christmas, there's a lot of talk at the beginning about, do we need the people driving the cars for real? And of course you do, because you get a sense of speed. But what became really apparent to me when I saw it was, it's more than the sense of speed. It is the focus on the actors, and they're not looking at the camera. They cannot look at the camera.
Yeah.
So when you're driving, which they did do, drive the cars at 150, 160 miles an hour, they're looking at the middle distance. And so I don't know if you ever notice on films where people are driving cars and they're doing... and it looks fake.
Yeah.
In this, there is no faking at all. And it really translates, I think, in their expressions.
Especially when they're kind of checking wing mirrors and stuff. You know, in terms of that, when you can just see the eyeline slightly shoot off to check what side's he on, where is he? You really kind of get that. And the speed of it as well. And also the, you know, the different... There's something like 1,500 different controls that one of those steering wheels can function. It's unbelievable how many things one of those Formula One drivers have to control within that, or can control within that steering wheel. It's crazy.
And then I've got to say, you know, back to Lucy's world as well, it's that was what is underestimated is the drivers in F1, they practice and they practice. Like you're saying, the simulator, they practice. And these 1,500 controls they have, they're like playing computer games, and they can go 180 miles an hour and have a gentle conversation with the people.
Yeah.
And they had a very short period of time, really, in the life of a F1 driver to actually learn how to drive these cars. So not only are they acting, not only are they driving 180 miles an hour, they're having to do all of that controls on the steering wheel, which has a direct result in keeping the car on the road.
No, I also wanted, just in terms of another question for Lucy, like, one of my favorite dynamics was the family of Bernadette and Josh. And my, you know, they were always just so naturally connected in all their scenes and everything they were doing. And is it true that that Josh and Cash, like, knew each other, right?
So, yeah, so one of my favorite auditions was getting Samson Keo, who plays Damson's manager, in. And he came in and he was quite nervous to meet Joe and Jerry. We did a meeting in the Soho Hotel, and he came in, and we didn't have much time because we never have enough time. And I said, "Samson, are you good to improv? Like, are you happy to improv?" And he's like, "Yeah." And then I was like, "And you really know about the world of F1?" And he was like, "Yeah, I really do." Anyway, I brought him in to meet Joe and Jerry, and we read the pages a few times, and it was a bit dry. And then I went, "Right, Joe and Jerry, should we let him improv?" And they were like, "Yeah, great." And then Samson just went whoosh like this, and just you know, made up all this stuff, and he's so funny. So then we cast him, and then I found out that he's really good friends with Damson, and I didn't even know.
I think they grew up together.
They grew up in Peckham, and Damson is not so familiar with British audiences because he's been in LA doing Snowpiercer, whatever it's called, for years. So he'd been away, but yeah, Damson and Samson grew up together, so that was cool. And then Sarah Niles, who plays Damson's mum.
She's great.
She's great. And she'd been in Ted Lasso. And I showed Joe this scene where she really takes down...
Ted.
Yeah. She really takes down Ted about equal pay and about women being paid less than men. And she just has this one scene. And Joe's like, "Yeah, she seems great." So we got her in and she auditioned. I mean, they all auditioned.
Wow.
And she's very cool.
Did you have to audition, not audition, but did you have to, like, with having the F1 drivers and stuff like that, I don't know, did you have to approach them and kind of...
I had to approach Martin Brundle, not the drivers,
okay.
But I had to approach Martin Brundle, Will Buxton, obviously. Will came to the read-through, do you remember, when Will Buxton was at the read-through and we all sat down and Brad Pitt says to Will Buxton, "I'm a massive fan." And you could see Will Buxton really trying to, like, keep it together. But yeah, we asked Martin to be in and Will Buxton, obviously, very early on, and Crofty and various others. But it was really great having them in to make it all authentic. Yeah.
There's a great scene, actually, with Fred and Zach and Kim.
Fred's a natural.
Fred is a natural on
screen.
He is,
one line.
Doesn't say much, but he just,
well,
like...
Well, he kills it. He does so well.
"I don't." That's all he says.
Yeah, what do you think?
I don't. I want to ask about the crashes. There's a couple. You've seen them in the trailer. I'm not giving anything away. But I've got so many questions about the crashes. It's like...
What, the fire one?
Well, all of them. I mean, there's a few. You know, it's like, you know... Yeah. Sorry, am I bringing it back? Is it trauma?
No, that was just... It was a funny day, actually.
Was it?
Well, it's this one where you're saying where the stunts just did one and the car just kind of went, you know, not far. And then we just had to crank it up a little bit.
Yeah. And a little bit.
And it was a little bit, and it went, and somehow, I don't know, it caught air and seemed to, like, go past the mark by about, I don't know, like 75 feet. It went,
so there's a barrier. There's a, you know, the fence barrier, which is pretty tall. The car was supposed to hit the barrier and crash down.
Or that sign, right? It was supposed to go through the sign, and it just went...
But it like went way off into the woods. Yeah, it was wild.
And it was tricky because I had all my operators were all ready because we believed what he said and it was going to go there. And then all of a sudden it just went. And then, and actually, thank God I had one operator that actually was like, he just stayed with it. And he just, because it was.
That's one of the great things is because they didn't know it was going to happen, it feels more real because the operator is actually trying to catch up with this thing that's happening rather than being a perfectly choreographed thing. It was really...
How many goes did you get to do that?
Yeah, because you don't...
We had two, one that went too short and one that went in the forest.
Too far.
It wasn't supposed to go in the forest. It just ended up in the forest.
One guy caught it.
And then we had that's to... Because we weren't planning on doing the scene in the forest. We actually planned it to be out near the gravel. And so now it was like, now we're in the forest. Now we got to make a little set that's a fireproof version of the forest so we could set the car in the forest. So that was kind of a little bit... All right, we'll just go for it. It was pretty impressive. Even Joe, like, I think there's a little behind the scenes, and he goes, "Oh my God!" And everyone was saying the same thing, and I was like, "Whoa!"
But to it's have a very two cool shots scene. At that, just two.
I mean, there was possibly talk about going for another one, but I don't know. Joe just thought it was like, "Are you sure?" The scenes were really wow.
Yeah, not after that one. Who knows where it's going to end up on the next one. How did it feel watching the film? Can you take a step back and just, you know, enjoy it as entertainment? Are you still kind of in it to not be able to do that?
Well, for me personally, it's the part of the process is you see bits of the film as you go. So like I said, the before Christmas, I saw a very early rough cut. But you're scrutinising it. You're looking for all your bits. So when was it last week? It was last week, wasn't it? In New York. Saw it, the first complete film of all of its, you know, singing and dancing. I sat there and I was like, all I could do was to look at all the decisions I'd made and question whether they were the right ones or not. So it's hard. You do. You're so close to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're so excited and you're anticipating it. And it's this, the result of all of that hard work, all of the preparation, all of the conversations. And then you get to see it again, which we did last night. And I got to say, it's amazing. It's like amazing.
Yeah.
How hats off to Claudio, hats off to you guys. You know, like we talked about these tiny little snippets of time where really important kind of character moments in the film are taking place either in the car or during the Grand Prix. And Stephen was saying, you know, it's true, some of these moments are like 2 minutes you had to film them. And I challenge anyone to find those moments because it's seamless.
Yeah.
It's absolutely seamless, you know.
Steve, were you cutting dailies, by the way? Were you kind of there doing, you know, editing as you were going, as it was being filmed?
Not totally. So Joe wanted me to be there at the track, and I said, that makes absolutely no sense because I'm not, you know, when I'm working, I'm kind of the only person that gets to be, like, alone with the movie, right? Yeah. And I don't want to be alone with the movie in the middle of the racetrack with a, you know, race going on. But he just really wanted me to be there just in case we needed to make some shifts or to change something up to get the input. So I went and I had told him, like, because we've been working together a lot remotely. We worked together all through COVID. I said, as long as there's internet, we'll be fine. Anyway, we get through the first week. As I predicted, he was too busy to ever come spend that much time working with me, which is fine. I expect that. But then he was going to work with me on a Saturday. So I'm at Silverstone, a deserted Silverstone, in a little trailer in the middle of the track. And I get a call from Joe saying, I'm really tired. I don't want to come in. Can I just work online with you for my hotel? So I was at Silverstone in a little tiny trailer. So from then on, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go back to L.A. and work from there.
underscore to F1. That's Drive Fast, rounding off this bonus episode of Soundtracking, recorded at the Apple Store in Regent Street with the wonderful, wonderful Ben Munro, production designer, Lucy Bevan, casting, Stephen Midioni, editor, and Claudio Miranda, cinematographer. My huge thanks to the four of them for taking the time to talk to me. F1 is still in cinemas now, and it obviously goes without saying, not least on the basis of what we've just heard, it demands to be seen on the big screen if you can't get along. As I mentioned earlier, I was away when those involved with F1 were available for interviews in the form of directors and composers and whatnot. But I have spoken to Joseph Kaczynski before in a chat that you can hear at edithbowman.com, along with every other single episode of Soundtracking. In fact, Jerry's appeared a couple of times, both with Joseph and then talking about Young Women in the Sea. Those are all up edithbowman.com. Follow us on our socials, we're at Soundtracking UK, and we'd be eternally grateful if you'd subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is called Soundtracking Extra. In fact, at the moment, we are editing an incredibly entertaining piece with the cinematographer of The Bear, Andrew Wade. Next up, really excited to share with you my chat with Lena Dunham and her husband, co-creator and composer on Too Much, Louis Felder. They join me to discuss the Netflix show, which loads of you have been talking about. So make sure you join me on Monday for Lena and Louis. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.